Welcome back to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. Nora Rose Mystic is a visiting scholar in the Department of Sociology at the University of Kentucky. She's also a regular State of Belief listener and has just published a new book. The title, Arab and Jewish Women in Kentucky, Stories of Audacity and Accommodation. I've had a chance to see the book. I like it. I want you to know about it. Dr. Mystic, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
Isn't it amazing how diverse and complicated our nation really is? A book such as yours reminds me first to resist the temptation to paint regions of this country with a broad brush, but also the importance of preserving at all costs the constitutional protections of religion in America, so that the kind of delicate balance that you describe in your book can continue to exist. I'd like for you, if you would, to start by talking a little bit about the communities that you write about in this book.
Okay. Well, a lot of it is centered here in central Kentucky where I am. And the funny thing about this book is that I interviewed women who are living alongside of relatives who talked about women who are no longer living. Mm-hmm. And so what you see in the book is the progression of families and their movement. So you have families who started out in eastern Kentucky in small town in the mountains in Appalachia, like Teresa Isaac, who was mayor of Lexington in 2006. But her family, her Lebanese family, started out in Appalachia and slowly moved their way to central Kentucky. And then I also talked with family members of Sarah and Frances Myers, who were Jewish sisters who had an elegant women's store in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And people may recognize Hopkinsville because it's home of Fort Campbell.
Mm-hmm. What is the historical context for these women's lives?
Well, for Arab Lebanese who are Christian and Jews, mm-hmm. they came to Kentucky about the same time, the late 1800s into the early 1920s, and they followed similar past and that they came to Kentucky and they peddled goods. They may have peddled different types of goods, mm-hmm. but their families would eventually open stores. Mm-hmm. And most often the Arab Lebanese were confused to be Jewish. They were thought to be Jewish. Mm-hmm. And we had similar names, maybe Isaac and Abraham and we were the non-miners and mining mm-hmm. communities. And mm-hmm. so the women tend to follow the initiative set and made by men. But, of course, I feel they established themselves or distinguished themselves once they got to Kentucky.
Yeah. You know, there is a line very early in the book. I can't remember right now whether it's in the introduction or not, but it just it struck me and stayed with me. You made the observation you were talking about the diversity of these people and the challenge of understanding and the way they've handled that. And you said something like, isn't it strange that you can see in Kentucky what you might not can see together in the Middle East? I've probably butchered your words, but listeners get the idea. And I thought that's a profound insight, but it also works both ways, that you can't always see in the Middle East what you see in Kentucky. Both places bring unique insights.
Yes, I think that's definitely true. And I would say not just the Middle East, but also right. urban areas in this country. But we associate Jews with New York traditionally and mm-hmm. Arabs with Michigan. And that we don't expect them to be in places like Kentucky, right. And how we've come across each other and know each other here.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you are a great fan of stories and admirer of storytellers, as well as being one yourself. I wonder if there's maybe a story from the book that you could summarize for our listeners just to give us a better sense of the world that you're writing about.
Let's see. Well, one that that I think is a funny story is about Sylvia Green and Mike Rawati, who she's a Holocaust survivor, and he's of Lebanese descent, mm-hmm. and they both have spent, well, he was born and raised in Winchester, Kentucky, which, gosh, I should know the population, but let's say around 16,000. Mm-hmm. I probably have it wrong. But and they're dear old friends, and she's in her 80s, and he's in his 90s. And we were having lunch together one day in Winchester, and a woman came up, you know, a non-Arab or a non-Jew came up to us and said, "Mrs. Green, I'm so happy to see you. I was just in D.C. and went to the Holocaust Museum. Have you been there?" And she said, "No, honey, I lived it. I don't need to go to the museum." And then she turned to Mike Rawati and said, "Mr. Rawati, do you remember my dad?" And she named her dad. And he said, "Well, of course I remember your dad. My mother always recognized his shoes in the Ku Klux Klan parade."
Oh, my goodness.
So
that's great.
Isn't that a good lunchtime interaction?
I mean, that's exactly right. Well, what drew you to write this book? I want to remind our listeners of the title, Arab and Jewish Women in Kentucky, Stories of Audacity and Accommodation. What drew you to this?
Well, I mean, partly, you know, it's my story. I'm a Jewish Kentuckian and was raised here in Kentucky. The other part of the story is that my father taught at a small school, a small college here in Lexington for nearly four decades called Transylvania.
I know Transylvania.
You do?
I do. I lived in Louisville for 11 years, so I know Kentucky well.
I saw that yeah. You went to the seminary.
Right. I did.
Well, he taught at Transy, and he befriended numerous students. And some of the students he befriended just so happened to be Palestinian Christians. And they were from one family, the Ackles, and they would send family member after family member to Transy. And our families melded into this long-lasting friendship that continues today.
Mm-hmm.
And the eldest member of the family, Musa Ackle, or Sida, which is Arabic for grandfather, when I was in graduate school, I would go see him every Friday afternoon and have tea with him. And he would tell me stories about taking a boat from New York to Palestine and how he fell in love with a Jewish woman on one of those boat rides. And he would tell me how he peddled goods throughout the American South. And I realized that our families had very similar immigrant tales. Mm-hmm. And that's what spurred me to pursue this work.
Okay. I've got to ask. I mean, can you tell us another story?
Oh, gosh. Another story.
Another story.
Well, I think the Meyer sisters are just were amazing women. I never met them. They died in the 1980s. Uh-huh. But the ones I spoke of who were from Hopkinsville, Kentucky,
uh-huh.
and they had this fancy women's clothing store, and they dress military dignitaries' wives. So General Westmoreland's wife would come in there and shop when they were there, and they were sort of rebellious women in a church-going town. These Jewish women every Sunday would have cocktail parties by the pool and be smoking cigarettes and drinking while the rest of the community was at church. And what I love is that our Colonel Kritz, his daughter, would come in there to shop, and then they were sent overseas. They were sent to Paris. They were stationed there. Mm-hmm. And then when she was getting married, the daughter was getting married, and sent for Sarah to be her fashion aide. So I can read you a little bit from the Nashville Tennessean that talked about it.
Dude, that'd be great.
So it says, since the Kritz family has been residing in Paris, the bride-elect has attended showings at the famous houses of Christian Dior, Chanel, and Balmain. She found their fashions extravagantly pretty, but Miss Kritz had always dreamed that when it came time for her wedding that Miss Myers would be her fashion aide, and so her dream will come true.
I just think
is amazing that they're in Paris and they sent for fashion help from Kentucky.
Isn't that something? Well, look, I mean, I could just go on saying I want to hear another story, but I know that in addition to the delightful stories in the book, there are lessons that communities can learn from the book. What are some of those lessons?
Well, I would say a larger lesson, and one motivation for myself is the stereotype that Kentucky is not a place where ethnic people live.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I would hope that one lesson from the book is that we are here and we have unique stories to tell, and hopefully someone might listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other lesson that I would hope people would take away from it is that I think the inclination is to really separate Arabs and Jews and to think of us as enemies and involved in global and biblical proportion conflict, and that actually our lives really overlap, and we confuse ourselves and others confuse us to be one another, and the interactions we have are really complicated and not one-dimensional.
Yeah. What, Dr. Muzdig, If you were telling a person, as I would like to tell our listeners, why it is important for our listeners to know this book, what would you say?
Oh, that's a hard question in life. Well, I think the reality is that Middle East tensions and conflict have a political life in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anyone who's paying attention knows that those tensions can be really high and the conversations can be difficult or not exist at all between Arabs and Jews. And I would hope that women's words in particular and women's stories and stories that I believe are coming from the heart can open up conversations and offer a possibility to have conversations that otherwise might not take place.
Mm-hmm. That's a great answer, actually. You obviously knew a lot about this subject, or you wouldn't have written the book in the first place. But what surprised you in writing the book? Were there any surprises?
Oh, surprises. Gosh. Well, I learned a lot more about the Muslim community in Kentucky. So that was... I really didn't know about the Muslim community. I guess what surprised me about it here is the extent to which it's very international. There are people who are from Iraq. There are people who are from Palestine and Pakistanis and Muslims from Africa. And from what I gather, what they tell me is that in urban areas in the U.S., these communities segregate. So you have the Pakistanis all together. You have the Palestinians from Ramallah. And here in Kentucky, where there aren't as many people, that the community is much more international, so they come together as Muslims, irrespective of their nationality and their background.
That? Well, that's a great insight, too. I've got to – we're running out of time. In fact, I'm going to tell you a secret that because I am a Southerner and on this radio show, I get questioned and laughed at how slowly I talk.
Mm-hmm.
When I am interviewing another Southerner, we add about 3 to 5 minutes to that segment just so we can get it all in.
I love it.
But I listen – what did writing this book do to you?
Oh, well, it's just so much a part of me. And the people, you know, it's funny because I think there are points in the book where I call the people in the book my interviewees.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to me, that's a joke because the people in the book have become so much a part of my life that I don't know my life without them.
Hmm.
And I even forget that I got to know them through the book because it seems like we've always known each other.
Hmm.
In fact, at one point I had a brunch for everyone who was in the book during the process of it. And Teresa Isaac, the woman I mentioned earlier, was leaving and she said, "You had to yell to get your point across and that's a good thing." You know, so
yeah.
So there's a familiarity and a comfort with the people in the book that I really take away from it and I really treasure.
The book is called Arab and Jewish Women in Kentucky, Stories of Audacity and Accommodation. And it's just out from the University Press of Kentucky. I'm very happy to have had the opportunity to talk with the author, Dr. Nora Rose Musnick, here on State of Belief Radio, a program that she listens to as well as contributes to. Dr. Musnick, I really thank you for being with us, and I thank you for listening to our show, and I thank you for giving the public this very fine book.
Well, thank you for having me and all the work that you do.